Good afternoon. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. Welcome, and thank you for joining the DiaSorin third quarter 2012 results conference call. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Carlo Rosa, CEO of DiaSorin. Please go ahead, sir.
Yes, thank you, operator. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Q3 conference call. I will make the usual initial introduction, discussing in detail the revenue evolution by product family and then by main geography, and then Mr. De Angelis will give a snapshot on the financials. Let's start from the Clear product line and specifically all the non-vitamin D products. Again, for the third consecutive quarter, we have experienced an overall strong growth in this product. In fact, in the quarter, growth has been 11.4%, and this has been driven mainly by two factors. In the established economies, so Europe and U.S., the infectious disease line, with all the new products in the area of HIV and hepatitis, has been the real growth driver. In emerging economies like China and Middle East, the traditional product lines like oncology, with the installation of more liaisons, have been a positive contributor to the growth. As far as vitamin D is concerned, we are seeing a different picture depending on the different geographies. And this is not new, but it is something that we've been experiencing over the last three quarters. In the U.S., vitamin D in the quarter has been particularly weak due to the seasonal effect, but also due to the coming into effect of all the renegotiated agreement, as we have already discussed many times in the last few calls. Vitamin D decline versus last year has been around 20%. It is important to note that as of September 2012, 84% of the total agreements have been renegotiated and extended 24 to 36 months. We expect, therefore, that the price erosion, as we said, will continue until Q4, to then smooth out starting from quarter one next year. In Europe, vitamin D is down around 15% in the quarter versus previous year. This has been quite exceptional since the vitamin D business in the previous two quarters had been quite stable. We believe that this has been associated with an exceptional ordering pattern in a couple of countries, and we expect the business to go back to its normal level in Q4. Clearly, also in Europe, there is a seasonal effect related to the low season and the summer. In Australia, as I reported previously, to the re-signing of the Sonic agreement, vitamin D is down 50% in value versus last year, but is up 30% versus previous quarter, as a result of getting back in July from a competitor all the vitamin D business of the second largest lab in the country. So overall, worldwide, vitamin D in the quarter is down 13.4% versus previous year. Before we move away from vitamin D, let me comment on the Japanese registration. All documents and responses to the regulatory agency request have been completed and accepted. We are therefore waiting for the Japanese regulatory body to organize a meeting with the main opinion leader in Japan to ask their opinion on the necessity to have this new product registered in Japan. This is a formal step, but it's a step that is necessary for the registration of all new diagnostic devices in Japan. Due to the support provided in the last 3 years to DiaSorin by all the local clinical associations involved with bone and mineral dysfunctions, we have no doubt that this meeting will resolve positively for the process and for the company, and support will be given to the registration of the vitamin D assay. We expect the meeting to happen by year-end, but since this is something not managed by us, by the company, our ability to affect the timelines is quite limited at this point. Meanwhile, as we already discussed, Excel instruments have been installed at the main customer site waiting for the green light to start testing. Let me now move to Murex. Murex has been a very strong in the quarter, and we had a record growth of 15% over last year. Now, let me move now from product lines to geography. So let me discuss sales trends in the main geographies. Let me first say that due to the way we are forced to report numbers in 2011 for Murex, my comments may slightly differ from the table presented in the press release. This is because up to the third quarter last year, a portion of the Murex revenues were still obtained through Abbott and Abbott Distribution Center, with a limited visibility from our side to the final destination. Starting from quarter three this year, however, the material allocation of the Murex revenue by geography is possible, and therefore I will comment sales by geography, including the Murex revenues. Hope that this is clear. So let's start from Europe. Europe is substantially flat versus last year in the quarter, but the number does not provide justice to the different trends of the underlying businesses, so I would like to discuss then some different geographies. In fact, Europe is split in three groups of countries. Germany, Austria, the Netherlands showed a growth respectively of 11%, 50%, and 11.6%. This is mainly related to the success of the Liatonics installation that are now fully contributing to the sales development. Especially for Germany, key has been the ability to win business within labs belonging to the Sony Group, and this, we believe, is related to the relationship established through Vitamin D in Australia. So we paid dearly in price for the renewal of the Vitamin D agreement, but now we are getting the contribution back throughout the Sony Group with other product lines. France, after suffering in the first two quarters due to the re-entering in the market of a large competitor for vitamin D, is now stable with a very limited loss versus previous year. I mean around 3%. So quarter on quarter, France is down 3%. And we expect that this country will start to positively contribute to the growth starting from quarter four, or at worst, Q1 next year. Italy is now in a binder. Data reported from Assobiomedica, which is the Italian Diagnostic Manufacturer Association, shows that the market where Diasorin operates has been declining 5% in the quarter, mainly driven by austerity measures. Diasorin, through a number of new customers won with Liaison Excel, has been able to outperform the market, but as we speak, Italy is not a positive contributor to the growth. So the sales are stable, but is not contributing to the growth of the region. Finally, Spain. We have decided to freeze commercial activities, stop installations, and drive the business in terms of profitability rather than growth. Depending from the outlook of 2013, we may decide to unfreeze the business next year. Otherwise, we will continue to drive margins until we will get a better visibility over this market. As a result of this decision, sales are down around 15% in the quarter. However, receivables are under control and the profitability of the subsidiary is guaranteed. Now, let's move to Asia-Pacific. Asia-Pacific, with the exception of Australia, which we just discussed before, has shown a very strong growth driven, as usual, by the Chinese market, which has grown in the quarter 34% over last year. By year-end, we will reach an installed base in China of 400 liaisons, and this is the main reason for the success in the country. But let me also remind you that we got the registration of Liaison Excel, which will be officially launched in December 8 in Shanghai. It is also worth mentioning that in the rest of the area that we sell to distributors for the rest of Asia-Pacific, we are experiencing a good growth, which is 10.5% quarter-to-quarter. In this region, in Asia-Pacific, we have initiated a very strategic program in India, as we have discussed in the past, through an alliance with the Triviton Group. We have now hired all the necessary staff, and we plan to start operating from January 2013, while now we are transitioning the business from our current distributor to our own control. Now, let's move to South America. South America has turned an important corner in this quarter, and this is mainly due to Brazil. In Brazil, the Diasorin business is divided in three components, each of which is representing a different market segment. The liaison business in the quarter has grown 30%. This is a business mainly related to mid-sized labs where the liaison has been traditionally successful in infectious disease product families. Second is the Nurex business, which is what we inherited from Abbott. This is mainly a blood bank business, and it has been traditionally quite stable. This is a strategic part of the business in light of the launch of the Liaison XL platform, which we expect to get approval by the end of quarter one next year. Finally, there is a seasonal business related to certain large public tenders, which are mainly driven by the government. As discussed in the previous quarters, a large tender has finally been awarded in Q3, and we started shipping products in July. Therefore, you see the results of this tender in quarter three. Then let's move to the U.S. We have already discussed about vitamin D previously, so I will not touch again this subject. I would like to focus, though, on two separate opportunities, infectious disease, on liaison and molecular. As far as infectious disease is concerned, this product line is up 22% versus last year, and this has been the focus of Diasorin over the last quarters. We strategically believe that it is an area of future growth for the company, and we intend to invest in this area, both bringing new products to the U.S. market. As you know, we have a program to expand the liaison menu by 20 products, which is currently ongoing. But also, we are also looking into opportunities or acquiring businesses in this clinical area to springboard growth of our U.S. commercial subsidiary. As far as molecular is concerned, we have transitioned the Nordic U.S. customers to Diasorin. It is mainly a small business in HLA typing labs. However, we convinced ourselves that there is an opportunity which is provided by this, by entering into this market, which is not crowded by the traditional big players and fits perfectly with the size of the Nordic equipment. For this reason, we have decided to hire a dedicated sales force to specifically target the 200 HLA typing labs which are available in the U.S., and we will start selling products from quarter one next year. Let me now focus and discuss on the XL placement. In the quarter, a total of 126 new Liaison XLs have been installed, taking the total installed base of XL to 480 systems, around which 60 are under evaluation and will start generating revenues from next quarter. This is something that we have consistently seen every quarter. So a portion of the installed base is under validation and then start generating revenues the following quarter. This is in line with our expectations, considering that traditionally in Europe installations do not occur in the month of August. Let me now move to the R&D pipeline. As stated, the Diasorin pipeline is full of new products, and we have been delivering so far according to the promised timelines. In Q3, we have released and got a CE mark for the HTLV 1 and 2 assay, which is very important assay to complement our blood bank panel of assays. For Q4, we expect the new GDH assay for the CBT cell and the aldosterone assay to be made available to the market. The release of the aldosterone assay will be marking an historical moment for Diasorin, because it will be the 100th assay available on the Liaison platform. Now, last but not least, the molecular lamp. In October, we have met all the analysts who have been working with Diasorin in the last few years, and we have unveiled our strategy for the molecular product line. This week, we have obtained the CE mark for the first two lamp products and the Liaison Lamp Analyzer, which has been officially launched in Europe. Now, let me now move to financials. Mr. De Angelis will drag you through the numbers, and then I will come back on comments on the extraordinary dividends. Dear Luigi.
Thank you, Carlo. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Let me focus your attention on some key relevant points of the quarter ended on September the 30th. I would like to spend some minutes on the marginality of the group and on our capability to keep our margin high. As we have already said in the last quarters, conference calls, 2012 has been and still is a transitional year for Diasorin, where the vitamin D trend, driven by an increasing price competition in some key markets as United States and Australia, is offsetting our double-digit growth in all the rest of our CLIA business. Anyway, we are still comfortable in keeping constantly our EBITDA marginality at a very high and significant level, thanks to the fact that all our CLIA products enjoy a standard margin in line with vitamin D and that their revenue trend is still growing double digit. The Nordiac consolidation, although absolutely strategic and key to deploy our strategy at 360 degrees on molecular diagnostic, is partly affecting profitability. Said that, if we include the Nordiac business operation, our EBITDA summarized to 42.8 million of euros, equal to 41.2% on sales, a percentage in line with what already experienced in the Q2 of 2012. I would also like to point out our capability in containing our operating expenses. First, if we consider the 9 month period, the increase of 5.9 would be 230 basis points lower if we express at current exchange rate. Therefore, at constant exchange rate, the difference is equal to 3.6. Second, bear in mind that OPEX increase already embeds the higher cost we have to feed our molecular program, both in terms of R&D and sales and marketing. To sum up, we are conscious in keeping our cost basis under control and focus in driving the company through 2012 according to what we promised and we committed. We are also really comfortable to the capability of the group in generating a substantial amount of cash every month, also thanks to a wiser management of our net working capital, where we have been able to reduce the timing in cash in our receivable, while keeping under control also our inventory levels. In fact, 2003-2012, inventory was equal to 86.3 million of euros, in line with the previous quarter, whereas our DSO has improved, notwithstanding the hot economic conditions in certain markets where we operate. Last but not least, let me focus on our net result, which improved 6.4% versus 2003 of last year, totaling 22.3 million of euros ex Nordiac. This is also the result of the policy that the group adopted by the group concerning the management of the currency effect. And on our net financial position, which was positive for 75 million, increasing of about 23 million of euros compared with a positive balance of 52 million of euros as per June 2012, and increasing 33.3 million of euros compared with the positive balance 41.6 of euros as per the end of 2011.
Thank you, Federico.
Thank you,
Jeff. Okay, before we move to the Q&A, let me just provide some comments on the decision of the Board of Directors to propose to the General Assembly the distribution of an extraordinary dividend equal to 83 cents per outstanding share, equal to a total amount of cash of 45 million euros. If we go back to 2011, Diasorin distributed an ordinary dividend of 22 million and bought treasury shares for 44.9 million for a total amount of cash used equal to 67 million. If we now look at 2012, as you know, we have already paid an ordinary dividend of 25 million. We have bought Nordiac for 7.6 million. leaving a net financial position as of September 30th, 2012, of $75 million with $92 million available cash. Now, looking at the substantial and constant generation of cash that we currently generate and we believe sustainable in the near future due to the high profitability of the business, and taking into account the current net financial position, the Board of Directors decided today to propose the distribution of the extraordinary dividend of 83 cents per share. Let me make clear that this decision does not affect our ability to grow the business by continuing our strategy of smart M&A whenever and wherever we find a target that fits our portfolio of technologies and products, as we've been doing so far in the last few years. Now, I think that we should turn to the Q&A session. Thank you, operator.
Excuse me. This is the Chorus Call conference operator. We will now begin the question and answer session. The first question is from Romain Zana of Exane. Please go ahead, sir.
Yeah, good evening. Thanks for taking my question. We see that you are approaching, I would say, the inflection point on the top line with a kind of stabilization also on the decline in vitamin D. Looking forward, I mean, and more thinking about 2013, what kind of organic growth do you think you can achieve now that business is stabilizing on vitamin D?
Romain, unfortunately, as you well know, I cannot provide you an outlook to 2013. We plan to provide guidelines in March, I believe, when we report the year-end results. However, I spent a lot of time during this call trying to describe the different trends in the different geographies in detail, because I wanted to give you the ability and give all the investors the ability to read through the numbers. As you said, as you have seen today, there are different trends in different geographies where, as far as vitamin D is concerned, as we have always stated from the beginning, throughout 2012, there is an effect that of stabilization of prices that will continue. In other geographies, however, in the U.S., what we have seen is that the quality of the Diasorin product has been more and more recognized, and it has allowed us, as it happened in Australia, to win back certain customers from competition. So it doesn't mean that quality drives price up, unfortunately, but in this world, at least quality drives customers back. As far as Europe is concerned, my comment is fair and simple. Is a combination of two different stories. Growth driven by Excel in the north of Europe, strong growth driven by Excel, and stabilization of business driven again by Excel in Italy, which as we all know today is in a difficult situation. And then very clearly on the emerging countries, the business has been doing well, and I believe we continue to do well. But as far as 2013 guideline is a little early.
And just a follow-up question, just on the cash flow and the extraordinary dividend. Is it a choice from your side to, I would say, to arbitrage towards a shareholder return, because at this time you don't have identified any specific acquisition targets, or do you consider that it does not prevent you to go for a potential acquisition on the short to mid-term as well?
No, Romain, the reason for the dividend is simple and I think understandable. We have lots of cash at hand, and we continue to generate lots of cash. We have, as we have done last year, and we repeated this year, we have invested a portion of this cash when we don't find a target that is suitable, into trying to create value for the shareholder. It was a buyback program last year. It's an extraordinary dividend this year, but very clearly that doesn't leave the company stranded in terms of financial resources. As said, today we have a net financial position of 75 million. We have 92 million in cash as of September. We plan to continue to generate cash, and we have ability to conduct an acquisition campaign, as we have always done, with the resources that we have. In terms of the other problem you need to consider is that as a manager, as a company, holding so much cash these days where we cannot take any risk, so the yield that we guarantee to the shareholders as a company for the cash is practically zero, it doesn't make sense. So we believe that we should be returning a portion of it back to the shareholders so that they improve the yield on the cash themselves, but we continue to look at targets, and with the clear intention, as I said before, when I made a comment specifically to the U.S., to buy assets to strengthen our portfolio.
Okay, thank you very much.
The next question is from Martin Wales of UBS. Please go ahead.
Hello, good evening. This first question on the sort of dynamics of Liaison XL. If I work through your numbers correctly, I just want to clarify I've got this right. You've installed 126 Liaison XLs. Some of those are swaps for Liaisons because your Liaison number appears to have dropped by 40 quarter on quarter. Is that right?
Yes. Absolutely. Because, okay, if you ask, listen, finish up the question and then I will comment on this.
The second part of that question is, where are we going by year end? You've said 500 to 600 net systems installed by year end. What proportion of those will be revenue generating, given that you only installed 60 revenue generating units in Q3? Maybe just give us a little bit more color on what's going on dynamically here.
Yes. Yeah, we reaffirm, I think, the number that has been with that of installation. We said, I believe we're going to end up around 550 systems, give or take. So in the Q4, we have a funnel of Liaison XL installations. In terms of the swap that you said, in quarter three, we completed the rollout of LabCorp, and we also completed the rollout of XL in certain key U.S. Customers. And therefore, we had an outflow of Liaisons from these accounts that we scraped, so they were fully depreciated, cannot be reused, and refurbished, and we just tossed them. Very clearly, to do the math when you swap systems is quite complicated because, as you know, every two Liaisons, you can place one XL, or let me say the ratio is probably 2 to 3, which means that if you look, when you do the swaps of multi Liaison platforms with Liaison XLs, if you just look at the total number of a combination of Liaison and Liaison XL, it looks like the company is penalized. But this is part of the mathematics when you put inside a bigger system, substituting multiple smaller systems. Okay. In terms of what you ask on the cash, okay, on the profit generation of Liaison XL, yes, we have a rolling, which is usually around 15% of the install base of Liaison XL, to the total install base, which are there for validation, and then they kick in the following quarter. So I would say it should be quite physiological to have between 10 and 15% on a quarterly basis under validation.
Okay, thanks, Carlo. And in terms of your revenue guidance, if I was being harsh, I would have said you've modified it down slightly from to same as last year, from same to slightly ahead. And what's driving that? Simply currency, or where you're getting
where you're generating your revenues from, or anything more fundamental.
Sorry, Martin.
If I was being harsh, I would say that you've your guidance in terms of revenues is, if anything, modified down slightly because you were saying same to slightly ahead. You're now saying the same. I'm just wondering what's driving that. Is it simply currency, or is there something more fundamental?
I think it's unpredictability, to be honest with you, in the current economic environment, especially in Europe. And therefore, as you know, I am a realistic, conservative guy, and I want to anticipate to the investors what I see as we speak. Unfortunately, as we had the opportunity, I believe, to discuss in the past, these days, a good month or a bad month don't mean anything to the trend.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the visibility I have on the revenues as we speak. What I think is worth noting, though, is that the one of the biggest concerns that I think some investors have expressed in the past related to the profitability of the business in absence of vitamin D or with a declining vitamin D has been proven wrong, because notwithstanding the fact that, again, as I said, that 20% vitamin D decline, the company enjoys an EBITDA margin which is 41.7% and still an earnings in excess of 22%. No, so I think this is it.
Okay, look, I'll go back into the queue and let other people ask questions. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from Peter Welford of Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my questions. I have three, please. Firstly, just on the dividend, can I just confirm that the extraordinary dividend will have no impact at all on the ordinary dividend policy that will be announced with the full year 2012 results, I guess, next year? Secondly, then, just on molecular diagnostics, now that you've got sort of launched with the platform there, can you sort of give us any of your initial feedback, I guess, from after consolidating the Nordiag business? I'm thinking particularly with regards to the US and sort of the business you mentioned where it's now come online. Have you sort of seen any early signs of interest in that line? And then thirdly, just on the outlook again that Martin was mentioning, can we just confirm whether or not the inline outlook, is that on a euro basis or is that on a organic local currency basis, excluding the impact of foreign exchange? Thank you.
Okay. On the dividend, is a very quick answer. It does not or it should not have any impact on our ordinary dividend. So we will continue, as said, our policy for ordinary dividend is 25% of net earnings, and we will continue like that. As far as molecular diagnostic is a little, let me just answer to two questions you had. First one is consolidation or bag done. We've done it. Manufacturing has been moved to Ireland, so the products, as we speak, are manufactured in Ireland, and we're in the process of completing the reorganization, which will leave us with no more than four people in Norway, which are the R&D people, which are contributing now to the new project, which is the development of the new platform, the consolidated platform for molecular diagnostics. As far as launching the products, well, there are two components to this. There is the U.S. business I was discussing is an extraction business, is a business that that Nordic had developed. To be honest with you, my intention was to just close it because I thought it didn't make any sense. But when we looked into it, we understood that there is an opportunity in those HLA labs. And therefore, we decided to invest. We are hiring a dedicated small sales force, but we believe is a very nice opportunity there. As far as the new products, it's a little early because I think we have schedule the first 20 installations, but they are happening these days, so sorry, but we will comment on it probably and for sure on the next call. In terms of the outlook that I'm giving is at current exchange rate, so as we see it, we believe that revenue should be in line with what we had in 2011. And again, as I discussed before with Martin, the reason why I see this is that the environment is very unpredictable. And so I prefer to be cautious and just tell you the way I see it.
Thank you.
The next question is from Andrew Olenau of Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my questions. A couple of things. One is that I was a little bit late to the call, unfortunately. Would you mind explaining to me exactly what happened with vitamin D in Europe in terms of the slowdown and why you feel confident that that's a blip for a quarter to start?
In Europe, as I told you, the vitamin D is down 15% in the quarter, okay, and 15. This has been exceptional, meaning that if you look at the history of vitamin D in Europe, we took a hit in the first quarter versus last year, but simply because last year was inflated by the fact that we had a business that we got from the fact that Roche had withdrawn the product, was not in the market, and et cetera, et cetera, what we already discussed. And then it did stabilize going forward, and in Q3, in a couple of geographies, there is a seasonal effect, but we also saw some slowdown, which honestly, I don't think that has nothing to do with lost business, nothing to do with anything, so I believe it is, nothing to do with change of reimbursement or these things. It had to do probably with an exceptional effect and an ordering partner. So I believe that Europe will go back to, a stable vitamin D starting in quarter four. Don't forget that the underlying, however, if you look into the vitamin D trend in Europe, stability doesn't mean stability at the end of the story. Stability means that as a consequence of competition, you win some, you lose some price erosion, but increasing volume in certain geography, net effect of all this means that the business is stable, which is a condition that you are not experiencing in the U.S. or in Australia for a very simple reason, that for those markets, volume already got so high to 20% penetration that is not driving the growth any longer. So this is what we discussed regarding Europe.
And then can I ask you, looking at your vitamin D, or sorry, your Clia X vitamin D growth, it's obviously been very strong for the sum of this year. Is it safe to assume that the growth that you've gotten is not generated by the new products that you've gotten approved in stool testing and infectious diseases and in bone metabolism, and that instead that's just Excel placements? And if so, what kind of bolus of growth are you expecting, and when do you expect that to come through from the products that you've launched in Q1, Q2, and Q3?
Okay. Two questions, I believe, in one. No, I don't think that this is you can attribute this to a single product. I think that the whole line has been growing, but with differences among geographies, and this is a comment that I made before, no? So it's infectious disease in certain areas, whereas in emerging markets is oncology stuff, no? Stuff that is tough to sell in Europe, but you can sell in emerging countries because the user, there are new customer, new business associated with this. To be honest with you, yes, we had a strong growth, a double digit, but you should take in consideration that we had a strong growth, notwithstanding the fact that in Europe, volumes of testing in general is clearly suffering. So what I'm saying is that if there is a stabilization of the current situation, you would expect stronger, even stronger growth of the Clia business. Now, we are launching products by year-end and throughout next year for Clean. But as usual, the contribution that you get from new product usually comes 6 months to 1 year after launch, because it takes time to get customers and do validation and so forth. So the growth that you see in a certain period of time is always related to product that you launch usually the year before.
And then finally, there's been a mix of interpretations, according to the guys I talked to on the sell side, of what analysts walked away from your molecular day with in terms of revised 2015 guidance for the kind of revenues that you could generate given the Nordiag acquisition and now using not just extraction but also amplification technology. Could you possibly give us a bit more specifics around where in 2015 your previous guidance of 15 to 20 million euros should go?
You know the answer, right?
I only ask questions I know the answer to.
Right. I can't. No, I cannot do it. If you remember, when we had when we had the meeting there in Ireland, the intention was not to provide a guideline in firm numbers, but was to provide an understanding of the features of the technology, the reason why we want to, we believe we can be successful against an established technology like PCR, and then provide some expectations in terms of number of placements and so forth, so that you guys could, build your own numbers. And I believe that some good work has been done. I mean, I think we've been good, and you guys have been good in understanding what our intentions are. One comment I can make: I believe that 15 to 20 million of the previous guidance was conservative. No, and I believe with the products we have and the technology, we can do better than that.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
The next question is a follow-up from Martin Wales of UBS. Please go ahead.
Yes, molecular diagnostics. I understand it's very early days, but we have had some clarity on how reimbursement for molecular diagnostics in the US is going to be going forward. This is an area we haven't really, outside of the HLA typing, planned or given us any details of any plans. Have you had a chance to look at? Have you had a chance to look even at the proposed reimbursement going forward? And does that encourage you to get more involved in the United States market in molecular diagnostics?
Listen, we really started this venture preparing for tough times. No, this has been my vision is that this world, even with Obama, cannot afford expensive technologies, and therefore we prepared ourselves with times where reimbursement we will get tougher than it is today. But still, we can play in that environment making a substantial amount of profit. Now, this is a general comment. So am I looking at the business from a reimbursement perspective? No. There is clearly, though, a positive effect in terms of acceptance of molecular diagnostic as viable technologies. Absolutely, yes. But again, the problem is that lots of customers cannot afford it because it's too expensive as it is today. So I believe this is the right time for us to enter the market because we're able to price these products at a good price and get an immediate acceptance by the market. Specifically for the U.S., as you know, our strategy is limited in the U.S., meaning that yes, there is the HLA typing business, which honestly, where the issue is not reimbursement, so it's a fairly rich market for extraction. And then it's limited in a sense that we have not decided yet to bring to the U.S. The infectious disease products, with just one exception, which is the C. diff, as a complement of the stool strategy. And these days, the C. diff reimbursement is good. There is a trend at the FDA level to block all immunoassays for C. diff and force everybody to move to molecular. And we know this very simply because when we try to bring to the U.S. our liaison CD product, we have been rejected, but not because we are diasorin, but because the FDA said from now on we only accept molecular diagnostic products. So it is an area that we gain more and more consensus. However, prices have been driven and are currently driven to substantially lower levels.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Martin.
The next question is from Mathieu Chabot of Bryan Garnier. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. One question on the profitability side. We perfectly understood that CLIA test profitability is basically in line with vitamin D. I wonder if you could give us some details on the profitability by geographies and especially in the emerging markets.
Let me try to help you out. The problem of looking at profitability in emerging markets is that you need to split the geographies between areas where we act through distribution and areas where we are direct. So let me first comment on direct. Assume that Mexico, Brazil, and China are emerging markets. Okay, today pricing in these geographies is in line with what you get in Europe and in the U.S. Actually, as far as China is concerned, pricing is fairly a premium for a very simple reason, which is there are no big private customers. So you sell to hospitals, mid-sized hospitals, and mid-sized hospitals usually are very good customers because it's small volume, high price. So in terms of profitability, China as a market is a very profitable market. Cost of operating in China also is relatively low because it is improving, but still cost of labor is lower on average than what you would pay in Europe or in the U.S. So it's a very good profitable business for us. Now, areas where we work through distribution, I think that you need to distinguish between commodity products and liaison products. And let me say that the Murex line in certain areas is a commodity product, okay? So as a commodity, when you sell a commodity product through distribution, the margin is significantly lower, clearly, than what you get with your own business or the liaison business. However, clearly, you don't have all the cost associated with the distribution. And therefore, when it comes down to the EBITDA margin, it is clearly lower than what we have as a group, but not substantially lower. I think we did comment in the past that if we just look at the EBITDA contribution of the overall Murex business, which is a combination of some good business, like the Chinese one, and some distribution business margin, which are the ones in that we experience in Africa, for example. Well, the overall contribution of Murex from that perspective is more than 30%. Okay, so it's below what we get from the other lines, but it's still a very profitable business if you manage it well. I hope I was able to answer to the question.
Yes, thanks, Carlo.
The next question is from Maura Garbero of One Investments. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thanks for taking my questions. The first one is really a clarification on your guidance, because if I look at the 9 months results, you have an EBITDA margin which is down 380 bps, and your guidance for the full year assumes the margins in line to slightly below 200 bps below. So what should happen in the fourth quarter to basically assume that such a margin recovery?
Listen, I think that we are referring to year-end 2011 EBITDA margin. So the year-end 2011 EBITDA margin was a bit north of 43%.
Yeah.
So I think 43.2%. Okay? We believe, as we said, that there is an erosion of 200 BPs from that number. And we believe that by year end, we should close the year with an EBITDA margin which is around 41%.
And considering that at the 9 month you are at 40.2%, that would assume an improvement in the last quarter of the year.
So you're talking full year. You're talking full year. Don't forget that in 2011, you're comparing apples with oranges, because in 2011 we had, as we've discussed many times, Q1 and Q2 which were extraordinary. I mean, we had Q1, Q2 with an EBITDA margin of 44-45%. I'm going by memory, but was very high. And the reason for that, we discussed in the past, was extraordinary level, some extraordinary events associated with vitamin D level that went through the roof. Roche was not there with the product, lots of different reasons, okay? The margin then readjusted itself in Q2 and Q3, Q3 and Q4 last year, and overall the margin last year was 43.2%. So what I'm saying is that comparing to the 43.2, we will end up probably a little bit north of 41% this year.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
The next question is from Elisa Corghi of Intermonte. Please go ahead.
Thanks, and thanks for taking my questions. The first one regards aldosterone. Can you elaborate a little bit on this product and the reason why you consider this launch will be a key one? And second question, I'm not sure to have understood properly. Did you say that you were awarded business from Sonic in Germany? And also you were winning back a key client in Australia. And, well, finally, did you have any hints about the kind of strategy that Roche is playing on vitamin D in the U.S.? Thanks.
Okay, Elisa, let me just... So first one was aldosterone. Aldosterone for us is a key product, as we have explained, because it completes a panel that we have, but it's crippled, which is the hypertension panel. So we are today a very good reigning business. And we want to, but, you know, we have been partially able to enjoy this market because we could not provide a full solution. So with aldosterone, which will be launched in weeks, we complete the panel, we will be able then to enjoy the full market potential for this essay. Keep in mind that aldosterone is also key because it allows us to play a role into these endocrinology specialty labs where we have lots to offer, and we are present today with vitamin D, we are present with all the other products. So it's a combination of our ability to continue to grow and serve that market, as well as the ability to anchor the vitamin D business. Now, the second question that you had was related to Australia and Sonic, right?
Yes, and also I didn't understand properly, but did you say that you won business from Sonic also in Germany?
Yes, two things. Regarding Australia, in Australia, last year, there was a second largest lab that because of price concessions by a competitor, decided to switch and move away from us, and then they really experienced bad quality problems, came back, and we signed them up for 24 months. And they are back starting from July with the Liaison XL and vitamin D. Okay, so this is what I'm saying, and we've seen instances like this where the issue is very simple. It's not that vitamin D is a key vital assay from a clinical perspective, so you don't die from misdiagnosis of vitamin D. However, if you don't have consistency of results, because vitamin D is tested routinely more than one time on the same patient, if the assay that you use is not consistent, then doctors complain a lot to the lab, because from the same patient they would see one value one day, then 3 months later they send another sample, they get a complete different value, they send another sample and get another value, and so they get a flood of complaints coming from the doctors, and for that reason they decided to come back to the ISO because with our product they never get a problem.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is again something we saw in Australia and something we saw also in the US. Unfortunately, when we get them back, we get them at Siemens price, which is today the market price, which is allowing us still very good margins, but it's below what we clearly used to sell vitamin D. As far as Sonic is concerned, we have won the contract for vitamin D as stated in throughout exclusively throughout all the geographies, and then we started, then we swap all the liaison with liaison excels in their labs to do vitamin D. They like the platform, and then we negotiated with them an expansion of volume of assays from vitamin D to other products, mainly in the infectious disease area. So there has been already a process of conversion going on in Australia, and there is a process of conversion that has started in Germany in some labs starting in quarter three. And then it will move to the U.S. Starting from quarter four. So my point has always been, you know, this renegotiation with this large lab has been very painful for vitamin D. I mean, it did cost us 44% of price concession. Mm-hmm. However, fortified the relationship, and we are expanding business behind vitamin D, which is the real intent, the real strategy of the company today. And this is what vitamin D is good for. Okay, so vitamin D today is a fantastic cash cow, as we said. Still is a very profitable business for us, but the real strategic value for vitamin D is to allow us to exploit the liaison excel with vitamin E and add more to that box.
Okay. Very clear. And can you provide an answer also on the last point, which was about the kind of strategy that Roche is playing on vitamin D in the U.S. Did you have any hints during the summer?
To be honest with you, not much.
Okay.
The only thing that we understand is that Johnson & Johnson, which has a product approved in Europe for vitamin D, has decided not to take it to the U.S. and withdraw it from the U.S. Submission process. Mm. But as far as Roche is concerned, today we have no visibility, but Roche, as I said, is a company that drives quality and value.
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't think we will see an effect on pricing coming from Roche.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you wish to register for a question, please press star and one on your telephone. For any further questions, please press star and one on your telephone. Mr. De Rosa, there are no more questions registered at this time. Sorry. There's another question from Laurent Saglio of Zadig. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my question. In the number of install bays, I missed the beginning of a call, but I just want to see if you said something. I mean, it seems to me 4,605 indicate that the number of liaison machines has come down by 40 and Excel went up by 126 in the quarter. I'm reading it correctly, correct?
Yes, you are, because as far as liaison is concerned, we had... I was just drinking something. As far as the liaison is concerned, we had the swaps of the liaison base in some very large accounts, so we took liaison out in quarter three.
Okay, understood. Do you think it's for the fourth quarter? Because I had in mind that at the year end we should finish at a certain number. So I want to see in the fourth quarter, do you see the same phenomena happening, i.e. A cannibalization of the a liaison with the Excel, and which kind of numbers do you have in mind for the year-end?
I think that by year-end we expect to fulfill the guidance, which is around 550 systems, total net systems in the market.
Sorry, I didn't hear you very well. You said 500 and?
550
net sales, net new machine installed.
Yes.
And with still in the fourth quarter, the liaison at zero or negative?
No, the liaison should be a non-contributor, let me say. But because, again, the net inflow in quarter three was heavily impacted by a couple of events, one of which is LabCorp, which is fundamentally finishing, and the other one was a couple of large U.S. accounts.
Okay.
Keep in mind, though, that we probably missed the discussion, but every time you swap liaison with Excel, in terms of net install base, you lose. Well, because if you have two liaisons, you usually put one Excel, and then if you have three liaisons, you put two. So it's not really one to two. But then in terms of net install base, you lose because clearly you install a bigger machine and you take out smaller systems.
Yeah, but net you sell more in terms of product into the Excel, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I'm saying is that so far it's been very linear the way we look at install base when we just had one box. No, because it was net liaison. Now that you have a mix of new customers, or take for example Sonic, where we had to swap liaison, a certain number X of liaisons with liaison Excel, a smaller number, but then we loaded liaison Excel with infectious disease products. So you have, if you just look at that account, you see, man, they reduced the install base, but we reduced the install base but increased revenue. So it's a fairly complicated way to look at the business these days. So we are providing the liaison Excel number isolated for you to understand how the liaison business, the liaison Excel business is doing, and then we provide the total number so you can do the math on the swaps.
Well, okay, and on the 550, which will imply actually a very good fourth quarter compared with the third, you have good visibility?
Yes, but it would not be exceptional compared to what we have done in quarter one and quarter two.
No, indeed, you're right. You're right, but you know, things are getting tougher. So the 550, you have good visibility.
Yeah. Yes, and again, keep in mind that again, the 126 that we did in Q3.
Mm-hmm.
You had a seasonal effect, no? Because fundamentally we missed 1 month because August in Europe is bad.
Fair enough. Okay. Thank you very much. Good luck. Good work. Thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Rosa, there are no more questions registered at this time.
Thank you. Thank you, operator. Good night.